very few people went home those days, to lunch, because travelling difficulties, but those did go in on bikes. So you all went into the canteen. Well, there was the workers' canteen, that was on the ground floor, where you could get things like a bowl of soup for tuppence and a bowl of bread. But you could have your own meal heated up in the oven for so much a week, etc. That was the labourers of the factory, shall we say, or all those on the what was known then as the weekly payroll. From then on, there was a separate room for the ladies, the young ladies that worked in the warehouse. This wasn't at the lectern, because the lectern had to use the same canteen as the British Dynamite. Then there was a separate room for them. And then you came to the weekly staff canteen, which was another room above the ground floor. But that was the weekly staff in the office, charge hands, the foreman, the lady supervisors, they all used that canteen. There was a smaller room which was for monthly staff, large mahogany tables and cut glass, etc. That was very nice. Because finally, the inner sanctum was always the director's room. If you made progress, you had to go from one to the other in those steps.
So you literally went up not only in terms of pay and promotion, but you almost went up a social class inside the factory.
Which was very important in those days, very important. You know, in Hines Park, the man who was foreman, people looked up to him. This was much more so in the village of Brandon, where the other half was, where to wear a white coat was considered put one in a different class. But a lectoid, or which afterwards became Knox, but it wasn't so pronounced because it didn't start till after the war years, and we hadn't got the long tradition that they'd got over at the British Dynamite or at Alex. On the other hand, we had the fire brigade. As there was such a high fire risk, we all ran our own fire brigades, and there was a fire brigade tournament every year which would take place at various...
What did that involve?
Well, it was just an ordinary fire brigade training. It was always reckoned with celluloid, that the only thing that would put out a celluloid fire is water in large quantities, and that's still true. There was ample supplies of water throughout the whole of the factory, because the lectoid factory had been built on the same lines as the Xylonite factory, although the fire risk was nowhere near as great. So generally it meant what we call putting up a standpipe, connecting up the hose, running out, connecting the branch, running back, turning the water on, knocking down the target. That was what we'd call the one-man drill. Then there would be two-man drill, three-man drill, based on various fire situations.
Did you have any equipment besides the standby pipes and the hoses?
Well, during the war years, of course, we had mobile pumps, but they were provided by the government in case the water supply failed due to bombing. But in peacetime conditions, we worked direct from the mains, and all that was necessary was standpipes, hoses, branches, and of course after that, in the shops themselves, you would have extinguishers, and they were always very fire conscious. I was chief fire officer for quite a number of years. It was one of my jobs to see that the fire precautions were maintained, and of course the company spent many thousands of pounds on fire precautions.
I know this is a subjective judgment, but do you feel that the company, in fact, had a good fire record considering the fire risk that they had at both plants?
Yes, they did. And mainly because of the insistence on the training of the internal fire brigade. We had direct lines in those days to the local stations. But if we had a celluloid fire, which we did from time to time, then it either burnt itself out or you had to get sufficient water on to damp it down within 2 minutes.
Now, you said celluloid fire. This, of course, would be at the main Pahalex.
Well, no, we had quantities of celluloid in Luxford as well. There would be lorries coming in, which would be loaded with celluloid, which would then come in to pick up lectoid. There would be sometimes material in our stores that had been made at Hayland. So we did have fires.
How often?
Small fires, very rarely, really, once in every 2 or 3 months. We'd never had serious fires, touch wood while I'm finishing. No serious fires, of course, were during the war years due to enemy action.
Now, you talked about a small fire. Would this just be, for example, a few hundred yards or so would be involved, or much less?
No, it was something inside the working area. A machine would catch light. The material on a machine would catch light, perhaps through excessive heat, failure, perhaps a water supply. You've got to get onto it immediately. Because later on, the casein plastic, by the way, is practically non-inflammable. It was sold as a non-flammable, and you'd have a job to burn that. But the materials that were used afterwards, some of the solvents, etc., made that we had very high fire risk in the Lactoid factory or the Larkspur factory as it was then, after the war years when the new plastics came in, because we were turning over to new plastics all the time. So we had higher fire risks, and well, as I say, if some of them got up, I think most of Hyde Park would have gone up with them.
Yeah. You said you experimented with shagreen as well. Now, what was this used for?
Well, this was meant to be a sort of getting into the quality market for toilet goods like mirrors, brushes, brush backs and things like that. It was a very difficult process because it meant cutting or extruding very, very fine rods, like filaments, and then cutting them off at the nozzle so they were little tiny balls in different colours. We made them in green and black and green and white and red, and then the whole thing had to be pressed in the right proportions to give a shagreen effect. It was so expensive that as an alternative to the real thing of course cost the earth, but as a plastic it never really took on, and that was another failure.
So it wasn't the technical problem there, it was
no,
the cost.
It was the cost in the market. Then we tried to make things like mirror backs, brush backs. They were better, but it was never so easily workable as celluloid, and consequently it never really interfered with that market or got into that market.